This is the Creating the Future podcast, and I'm your host, Jordan Kraus. Today I'm joined by TCDS Chief Student Advocate, Tara Maddock, and our Little Champs Director, Wanda McDonald. We're here to talk about the art of building community. Welcome, you two.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Tell us about your journey here at TCDS and how you've seen this community grow over the years. You're both on our Champion Service Award wall of staff who've been here for 15 plus years. So you've been here for a long time, and you've probably seen a lot of evolution and change, and certain things continue to be here at TCDS. So just tell us about your journey here.
Tara, you want to start?
Sure. So I am going to travel back in time and date myself a little bit here.
Let's go.
So 22 years ago, I was finishing up my elementary ed degree at the University of Arizona, and I was fascinated by child psychology and just the child's brain, all ages. So when I ventured out to look for my first teaching job, I decided I needed to find a really good fit for my own philosophies. So I subbed to USD, Marana, Catalina Foothills, did middle school, elementary. Actually, they thought that I was going to be a kindergarten teacher and all the places that I would visit. And I landed in fifth grade for 15 years. So anyways, I took my time and I realized that a lot of the big districts were focused on strictly academics. And that was about the time that standardized testing was becoming the primary focus, and keeping up, you know, that A grade within the school districts. Well, I came across an ad, Tucson Country Day School. It was clear across town. I decided, let's just go check this out.
And this is a while ago. Was the ad in the paper? I have to ask, was this a newspaper ad, or was this?
It was a newspaper ad.
It was. Oh, yeah, my gosh. So, yeah, you were. Sorry, I just had not
That's
to.
That's okay.
Not to,
so I pull up, and, you know, I was utterly astonished by the campus. And I come through, and I had a vibe. A vibe that, wow, children really, really have a community here. And I interviewed, and it wasn't until I met founder Richard Cooper, who said, "Do you love children?" I said, "I do love children." He said, "Tell me what it is about kids." I said, "They're just innocent, and they're moldable, and you have to be, you know, in tune to who they are and help them grow, not just in their academics, but socially, life skills." He said, "You're hired." And I've been here now for 18 years. I've watched over the 18 years here a lot of administrators come through and bring with them their curriculum, their programs. What's different right now is conscious discipline is not a program. It is practices that start with adults that then carry into the children, and everybody can utilize these outside of our community and into their later life.
Nice. Yeah, I can't wait to unpack some of that here in a little bit. Miss Wanda, how about you? Talk to us about where you've been, what you've seen here at TCDS.
My time at TCDS kind of started out from a place of being a parent first. I worked prior to being a member of the TCDS family as a children's specialist for Head Start, the Southern Arizona grantee. And I had two little ones at home, and so I needed them to be in a place where I felt they were safe. I had left the Head Start Child Parent Centers program and just went back to school and was just needing childcare myself. And I'll never forget, I came on a Sunday after church, and we still had a chain link fence at the front. And I happened to be looking through the fence, and at the time, the groundskeeper was Mr. David. He says, "Come on in." He tells me in Spanish, and I spoke Spanish. And I said, "No, I don't have an appointment." And he says, no, go ahead. And it was myself and my family, and he gave us a tour. And I was so surprised that someone here taking care of our campus on the weekend went out of their way to welcome me. And that was a place I wanted to find out more about. So I came back on a weekday with an appointment, toured. My children were enrolled here part-time in the preschool program every now and then. And so they had us fill out applications to be parent volunteers. They saw my experience, which then let me be a sub. Then eventually I became a staff member here, teacher, and now I'm the director. So I started out my journey as part of a TCDS family member. I call it family member because I'm here more than I'm at home, feeling very welcomed. And that sense of community is what has kept me here over 20 years. And it's what I think draws a lot of people to the charter school mentality and movement, that sense of community. And I think we're at a pivotal place now where we're refining our practice, where we are, you know, we have a diverse community of learners and of teachers and of staff. And so I think the more we can refine our practice and create a situation that continues to support the vision that our founder had, and make it appropriate for what our children are showing us they need and for what our staff are showing us and our families. So I feel my role here is to continue to help us with that endeavor of growth.
Nice. Maya Angelou is famously quoted as saying that, you know, people will forget what you said, they will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. So how does this quote resonate with the two of you in terms of what you do here at the school? You both talk about the importance of community. What strikes you with that quote?
Well, I think that quote resonates with me because, I mean, how I felt with my initial, you know, moment of actually walking onto this campus was that sense of this is a safe place. This is a place I want to be. So definitely, you know, from that parenting realm, it would be a place I want to send my children to. That's the culture that we want to continue to, you know, invite and create here. I think, you know, the way we make children feel sends a lasting impression on them that they will take throughout their educational career, but also throughout their life. You know, we say that academics are important, but that social and that feeling piece is just as important. And the atmosphere we cultivate, ultimately the relationships we build with kids will shape their sense of identity in not only our campus, but how they see themselves in the world.
Yep, that connection to another human being, right? When we keep that truth in mind that kids are going to forget the lectures we provide, they're going to forget a lot of the things we do, but ultimately how we make them feel. I mean, you can think about it. Think about teachers in your past, years ago. That stand out. Well, it's probably not because of an amazing lesson that they gave, you know, which, again, nothing wrong with that. Of course, we want our teachers to provide good lessons, but it's really about how they made you feel. That's what sticks, right? Sarah, how about you?
So this quote resonates with me in line with our service standards. Particularly, your example is paramount. And so when we're getting into conscious discipline, it has to do with your brain states. And in order for us to be problem solvers, we have to be in a brain state that is cool, calm, and collected. If we walk around just saying whatever is on our mind, how would that look? And I tell the kids that when they have conflicts, particularly emotional conflicts. That's primarily what we are dealing with this age group here at TCDS. And you know, things aren't going my way. So I always use that to them. If things aren't going our way as adults here at TCDS, how would it look here? Oh my gosh, Miss Maddock, that would be crazy. That would just not be good. Yeah, you're exactly right. That wouldn't be good. So your example is paramount.
Yep.
And what we say and what we do has consequences. it also comes with privileges. Mm-hmm. And those are the conversations that I have with our students. We can't take things back after we've said them. Mm-hmm. So we want to be in a frame of mind to remember that. And I always ask them, how do you want to be known around here? How you behave and how you make other people feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such a key part of our program here is this, our social program. So we've recently developed an academic framework that outlines our approach to academics. You know, at the pinnacle of that is project-based learning, kids learning by doing. But if you want the atmosphere, the conditions for kids to really problem solve and collaborate and do all the things that project-based learning requires, you have to have an environment where kids feel safe and connected, right? So our social framework, Ms. Maddock, that's something you head up, and with all the directors, we give equal emphasis to student social development as well as their academic development. So break down for us our social framework. What are its components, and kind of what's the why behind that?
So I like to think of our social framework as foundation of a home. If you're going to look for a home, whether you're renting, whether you're buying, you want that foundation to be on a slab that prevents all of the outside things from coming in, right? Makes you feel safe. That's the purpose of a foundation of a home. And so that's what I like to think of our social framework as. It is our foundation of our home here, and that we have a job to do in making everybody feel safe here. That's first and foremost. Then we work on building connections. And once we've established safety connection, then we can get into the executive state of problem solving. And without these recognitions of brain states and without a foundation as such, things will just seep in. Things will just seep out. And we want a strong foundation here, and that's what we're working to build.
Yeah,
and then the academic components are layered on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when we're talking about safety, it's not just physical safety, right? We're talking about psychological safety.
Absolutely.
Right. That's the foundation. When you can check that box, when kids can think to themselves, am I safe here with these people, with this teacher? Okay, well then that allows the brain to operate at that next level, right? You mentioned the brain states. The two of you kind of talk about the brain research here behind this, our social framework, because just to make clear, this isn't something that we just like, oh, let's make this up here. You know, this is rooted in brain science and the brain states. So talk to us about how brain science has impacted our social framework and those different brain states.
Well, I am just refining my practice when it comes to conscious discipline. But one of the things that, you know, Mrs. Maddock referenced is the brain states, and it's such a visual part of conscious discipline when we talk about the survival state being the lowest part of the brain. And that's where we adults can sometimes reside, but a lot of the times our students reside there. And that's their survival state when they're met with a challenge, whether it be from something they have to complete in class, conflict with a peer or a parent. That's the mode where the least amount of learning and regulation occur. The next state is the emotional state. And the emotional state, its name says it all. You're in a high state of emotion. You're not quite able to reason through things. You're not trying to fight or flight, but you're dysregulated. The next brain state, and the one what we as the adults try to maintain, is executive state. That's where you're problem solving. That's where we can help students regulate themselves because we've regulated ourselves. And so that's a quick summary of the brain states. Tara, do you want to go a little bit deeper into something I may not have touched on?
Sure. So what we're talking about is conscious discipline. If you were to break those two words down, what do you think of? Well, that's being in a state of a mind that you are able to discipline yourself. If you're in a survival state, whether it's a traumatic event, whether it is something that happened to you years ago and there are triggers, which we're experiencing that these days in education, as one in three children have experienced some sort of a traumatic
just kind of experience growing up.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. From the ages of birth to 17. Hmm. And so...
Yeah, like what would be an example of like the brain, like the survival state in action, right? I mean, you work with kids every single day, have for a long time, probably have quite an extensive archive of experiences that you can reflect on where the survival state really took over someone's decision making, whether that was maybe you or someone else. Like what might be an example of kind of a survival state, brain state scenario?
I see a lot of students who operate from that place, and as Tara said, it's usually trauma induced and experiential induced. But that would look like when they're met with a challenge or a conflict, they run. They are physically hurtful to themselves or to others. That is because they're trying to just survive. Mm. They cannot regulate. They cannot reason. And it could be something as simple as getting out of their vehicle in the morning and coming to school. Mm-hmm. But they had conflict at home. And so by the time they come into the classroom with the teacher, they are not wanting to be there. And so they run back out. And it's not the normal separation anxiety. This is something, survival state is the next level, where this child is not in a place of verbalizing their needs or their wants. And sometimes it manifests itself in lashing out with unkind words or an unsafe body.
That fight or flight.
Yep.
Moment, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're seeing a physical reaction. Mm-hmm. So it can be throwing things. Mm-hmm. It can be hiding, you know, underneath a table. Mm-hmm. What we have to remember, though, is that there are things that as the educator, we have to notice and recognize so that we can then help them get out of that state.
I was just going to ask, what do you do, right? When a child, let's just say, or even adult, but we'll just use children here, when a child is showing themselves to not be in that state of mind where they're going to be able to problem solve, be a part of a group, etc., what do you do? What are some strategies, some tactics? And even like for parents that are listening, mm-hmm. too, mm-hmm. Cause we all parents of kids, especially young kids, you experience that almost on a daily basis. Yeah. So what do you do?
I think the first thing you do is regulate yourself. Hmm. And that's the hardest thing, because we feel that as the adults, the parents, the grandparents, any person who is the older person in the situation wants to care for that child. That's where we're operating from. It's from a safety, keep this child safe, help them move out of this state. But we have to first regulate ourselves. And that sometimes is the hardest piece. And that's one of the things with conscious discipline, as Tara said, is that we have to be conscious of where we are before we can help a child who may be in whatever state they're in, especially a dysregulated state. So in my experience, if a child I come into a child who's in survival state, I just sometimes will just be in proximity, you know, stand close to them, because every situation is different. The child may not be able to tell you what they need. They may be running from you, but I try to be that calm in their storm. And sometimes just having that proximity, especially if they're showing us that they don't want to be touched, they don't want to have words, and just letting, you know, myself be regulated near them until they come to a place of being able to receive whatever message and support I can offer to them.
And that can be really counterintuitive, because I'll just speak personally for myself. I want to fix it. I want to do something. I want to take action to make things better, right? Yeah. And oftentimes that mentality, when you're working with another individual who's in that survival state that of mind, that fight or flight, it just makes it worse, right? Where you start demanding that they change their behavior. You demand that they apologize right now. You demand that they sit and do it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Right. So just
yeah.
be in proximity. You didn't say just like, let them be. That's mm-hmm. not what you're saying. You're saying just, okay, first take a deep breath, mm-hmm. let some time and space do its thing.
Yeah. And sometimes taking a deep breath, I've found that kids mimic me. So it's a mm-hmm. nonverbal way of communicating them. And I'll just breathe in and I'll blow it out. And I may speak what I'm doing. I'm going to take a deep breath right now.
Nice.
And I'm going to blow it out. And it sometimes it can be just enough to have them pay attention to what I'm doing to release some of their strong emotions that they're having. And I want to just be clear that conscious discipline doesn't always work the same for each child.
Sure.
But it does always work the same for the adult. That if we focus on regulating ourselves, we will meet that child eventually where they need to be met. And that's the most important piece, that we need to be conscious. We need to discipline ourselves. Then we can discipline the child consciously.
Yeah. See, that nothing gives a child a sense of security and safety than being around regulated adults who are in control of themselves, right? You know, that would send a really strong signal to me if I was a child who was just having a moment. Okay, I'm not going to get that reaction out of them that I might be looking for because I'm hurting. So I'm going to do some things that are going to maybe trigger this other person to come mm-hmm. along this fire with me. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, they're not. Okay. I think that's like the first step towards establishing that safe environment mm-hmm. for them. Right?
I think of the analogy of a car accident. When you're in a car accident, if any of you've ever been in a car accident, that is a traumatic experience. Your brain goes into autopilot of a survival mode. Who's there that's around you that is reassuring you things are going to be okay? I'm going to help you through this. Those would be your EMTs. Those would be your paramedics. Now, I don't want to make that analogy that's what we're here to do, because that's not, but they're there to make you feel safe. So that's where we have to come in and pay attention and notice, how are our kids coming to us each and every day? Ooh, I'm noticing Johnny's body language really, really looks as though he could be going into a fight or flight mode. So what am I going to do as the educator? We're going to have a quick conversation to reassure him. I see you. I notice you. I understand. I'm here for you today. What do you need from me today, Johnny? And sometimes you'll get an earful. Sometimes you won't. At least you've reassured the child they're going to be at school with adults that make them feel safe.
I heard one of you two say, I think it was one of you two say, that there's a big difference between noticing and judging, mm-hmm. right? Because in that mm-hmm. scenario, Tara, the command and control side of a teacher who's responsible, let's face it, for 15 to 25 mm-hmm. young people, like there needs to be an element of, I don't want to say control, but you get what I'm saying here. It can be easy to, instead of noticing that and kind of asking that question, just making it known, like, hey, I noticed, you know, I'm here for you, whether mm-hmm. that's right now or 10 minutes down the road mm-hmm. or 3 hours down the road. That's very different than turn it around. Mm-hmm. making a judgment and then trying to, you know, correct that behavior. Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. all that's going to do is just fester mm-hmm. even more, and mm-hmm. good luck right that day for yourself or that student. So I thought that was really mm-hmm. simple, but brilliant. There's a yeah. big difference between noticing and judging.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think it goes back to Maya Angelou's quote that we referenced about how you make them feel. Mm-hmm. If you notice me, you know, using Mrs. Maddox's example, then I feel seen. If you judge me and tell me to fix it when I immediately walk in, or you want me to comply immediately, then I don't feel seen. And that's the difference between noticing and judging in action.
Mm. Don't see, you're not seen or safe, right? That psychological safety, that foundation, that slab,
yeah,
not there, you know? So it's hard to build up from there, so the next, brain state is the emotional brain state, right? The second of the third. So talk to us about that brain state and what that kind of looks like, sounds like.
So the emotional state is a lot of verbal actions. things aren't going my way in this world, I'm going to plant my feet here and I am going to be heard. So this is where you see a lot of back and forth battles, even in your own home. Mm-hmm. How many times have I asked you to pick up your toys? Mm-hmm. Huh? Go to your room.
Guilty.
Yes, yes. And what happens with us as parents typically is now we're operating in an emotional state, getting into that verbal battle with our own child. It happens in the classrooms. The reason we get so offended is because we take it personal. Mm-hmm. Whether we're the educator, whether we are the parent, what? You're talking back to me. So what we have to do is give them the tools to learn how to appropriately express themselves and recognize, oh, I've got a lot to say right now. That Maya Angelou quote is coming in to play here. Remember, we can't take back what we say, so we have to be very careful. But that's bringing consciousness to them and having them pause and breathe. Same for the adults. I do a lot of that these days with my own teenager in my house, who, by the way, is a boy. And we tend to think girls are mostly the, you know, emotional teenagers. I beg to differ.
Mm-hmm. No, us guys, my son is right there too.
Pretty emotional. So,
which is a good thing, by the way. That's we want to make clear. Like that's a wonderful thing, right?
Yes.
It's how do we leverage that and harness that beautiful?
Well, they have to learn how to have a voice, mm-hmm. and that's how they feel that their voice is being heard. I'm being loud. Oh, I'm saying things that are hurtful that are going to get your attention. So what I have to do in my conscious state is take some deep breaths, not take it personal, and tell my son, we're going to talk about this when you're in a problem-solving state. What do you mean? What does that even mean, Mom? So we're going through this as a household, as I'm learning all about this conscious state, and he's starting to get it. He really is. He's starting to say, of course, with the eye rolling, whatever, fine. Walks away, comes back out, goes to his space, right? He goes to his safe space, which is typically his room, without me telling him. Comes back out. All right, so I think maybe we could talk about this now. Absolutely. Are you ready to talk about this now without the emotions involved? Okay, Mom. So it really is working. Mm.
And I like one of the things that you said, Ms. Maddock, is it is working. Conscious discipline is work. We have to be willing to take the time to do the work as the adults. And we have to consciously be aware of that. In a previous conversation, I think between myself and Mrs. Maddock, I made a comment about when you know different, you do different. I'm a mom of three boys. I have by no means been perfect. If you ask them, they will tell you. And to your point, Tara, I have emotional boys who would say things in their teenage years that looking back that I should have responded in a more of a conscious state. But the whole purpose, I think, for us taking hold of conscious discipline practices and understanding the research and the brain states is when we know different, we do different. And I think the kids that we serve these days deserve us to do different. And we staff deserve different. We want to connect with kids. We want to have that positive relationship with them. It's not always going to be easy, but we want that. And so we have to do the work to pay attention, to notice ourselves, notice them, and then do the work to stay connected.
Yeah, think of the enormous, really impossible challenge that a teacher would have to feel like they need to be in control of all their people all the time. And when they're showing themselves not to be, because they might be in that survival or emotional brain state, then the teacher takes it upon themselves to find even more, you know, controlling, commanding tactics, right? That's when the voices are raised. That's when threats are thrown out there and consequences are given. And we're kind of, and that's exhausting, right? So this is, yes, this is for our students first and foremost, but gosh, who's the one kind of in charge of the temperature of the room, so to speak, for those kids? Well, it's the staff, right? There's this really great quote I want to share here in relation to the emotional brain state. It's a quote from Adam Grant. And he says, a sign of emotional intelligence is refusing to let feelings dictate decisions. Feelings are electrical signals in the brain. We don't choose every sensation, but we are responsible for how we react. Emotions are rarely calls to action. They're usually cause for reflection. So whether that's taking a 5-second deep breath, going to your room, some tactic to, okay, reflect, I'm feeling this way. Nothing wrong with that. Those aren't bad feelings. Mm-hmm. Those aren't bad emotions. But we want to get you to that third brain state, which is the executive state. Mm-hmm. So tell us about that executive state and why that is such an optimal brain state to be in.
That's the fun place to be.
Right.
The executive state is where we want to be. It's the problem-solving state. How many times have you heard kids on the playground say, you're not coming to my birthday party, when they are mad? They're operating from the emotional state. Most children have no control over who comes to their party. They don't host it. Their parents do, but they're in an emotional state because their friend just made them mad. Mm. And they're going to say something to make their friend feel how angry they are.
Yes.
So the executive state is where we want to live. We want Johnny and Sarah on the playground and Sarah's irritating Johnny. Instead of him saying, you're not coming to my birthday party, he's going to say, Sarah, you just broke my sandcastle. That made me angry. I'm not going to play with you. I'm walking away. That's where we want to get kids to. Mm. So that's my little people example of executive state.
It's in the delivery of conflict and resolution is primarily where we want this to live. So when students pay me a visit in my office, it usually is some kind of a result of an interaction that they have had, whether it's with their teacher, whether it's with a fellow peer. And a lot of times teachers are looking for an immediate consequence of some sort, right? I'm the opposite in that. And I want my students to reflect. They can't reflect when they're in a survival or an emotional state. They need time. Mm-hmm. So if that takes an hour in my office, hey, you're not ready to problem solve this yet? You're just going to sit here and I'm ready whenever you are. Boy, middle schoolers can really, you know, take a lot of time. Inevitably, they come around. And then what happens is they own it. They have had the time to sit there and reflect, whether it's through a conversation, whether it's through silence. Okay, Miss Maddock. Okay, what are you ready to do? Well, you know, I'm ready to talk about what happened. Typically, it starts out with placing blame, but eventually we get down to, are you going to own this and how are you going to fix this? You've created a problem here. And the only time in their brain they can do that is when they're in their executive frame of mind. Hmm. So we can't be so quick to, I'm going to send you home out of school suspensions, in school suspensions. We have to better understand that they are in their brain states that are unconscious when they are typically saying things, doing things, and we want them to live there. They're going to make mistakes along the way, just as adults do. But what we want to try to do is get them to resolve their conflicts with resolutions that are reasonable.
I love how conscious discipline, our social framework, really builds ownership and capacity with each one of our kids to regulate themselves in life, right? We're playing the long game here. We're, you know, I think it's, you know, the traditional school classroom, we need to get the behaviors, get the reactions, the responses that we need in order to keep kind of marching everybody down the same path of quote unquote academic growth. I'll just call it what it is, test prep, you know, get ready to get that good score on Friday or that state standardized test in the spring. I just love how this approach really empowers kids to own it. And like I said, build capacity within themselves. You know, my own kids are here and I'm so happy that they're here because they are engaging with teachers who empower them. And instead of, because I think we can send mixed signals. Like, what are we telling kids if we as the adult are always trying to command and control their behaviors, command and control what they say, what they don't say, use fear as that tactic to get them to submit to my direction? Well, gosh, have you thought about the long-term, you know, effect of what that's going to do, you know, to your child and how they're going to relate to other people? And it kind of sends a clear signal that I don't trust you to make that decision. You can't make it, so I'm going to have to make it for you. Right. And that's not the culture we want here.
Right. Yeah. I think the culture we're trying to create and promote is one of ownership. And ownership comes with consciously knowing, you know, how you're feeling and how to respond to those feelings. And, you know, to your point that if kids are consciously disciplining themselves, when they come up against a test that's hard or hard work or something that they have to struggle with academically that's challenging, they can then use those same techniques and strategies to regulate themselves to face some of that work, quote unquote, that test, that project that's due, you know, all of those things connect to, you know, conscious discipline and the brain states.
Our community is lucky to have you too. You need to know that the work that you're doing to build that foundation here, we're not there yet, right? But we're working towards that. Right. I'm not sure you're ever there, but we're always striving to empower our teachers to operate within this framework so that our students can have a good quality experience, that they can have a quality experience. Hopefully parents who are listening in have taken a few tidbits away, and it's really, you know, it's about us adults. Whether we're a teacher, whether we have our own kids, grandkids, it's about us first, self-regulating, taking a deep breath, walking away, giving time and space to conflict. It's really that simple, but it's hard to do, right? Mm-hmm. So, Wanda, Tara, appreciate you coming on today and sharing your insights. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.